Welcome back to God Invention Radio, presented by Inventor's Digest. And now, here's your host, Brian Free.
Welcome back to segment two of God Invention Radio. Just like to take a moment and thank our sponsors, of course, Inventor's Digest. If you're not a subscriber already to the magazine, go on to gotinvention.com front page or any of the pages and click on the banner at the bottom, Inventor's Digest, and subscribe to the magazine and receive 33% off the cover price from that banner. We also have United Inventors Association, UIAUSA.org, QuickPatents.com, and China2S. Thank you for your support. Okay, by the way, if you're not already a subscriber where you don't get information about the upcoming show, on the front of Got Invention, there's a place to put your email address, subscribe to newsletter, and you'll get alerts on our upcoming guests. So put that in, hit submit, and you'll be on your way. All right, we have Bill Polkinghorne from Discovery Patch. He's a patent searcher expert for many years, and he works with major corporations and different types of people that are looking through intellectual property and finding if something is patentable or if they're infringing, if something is new. And Bill started to go through some of those different points with us. And Bill, did you want to just finish up on that point? I know that you had a really good story about the Bowie knife.
Well, I wouldn't call it a story. It's more of an analogy.
Right.
Yeah, just reiterating real quickly, you can gather information by doing a collection search and become knowledgeable about the technology that you're getting involved with. And you do a novelty search to determine whether or not what you're working on is, in fact, new. In other words, it hasn't been taught by another inventor through another patent. And you can certainly get a patent and go ahead and pay all the money and get ready to start selling it. And you might find out that you really can't sell it. A lot of people are under the belief that if you get a patent, you're going to be rich. And really, a patent does not give you a permit to manufacture and sell a product. It gives you the license to prevent others from using your invention without paying you.
Okay.
So since there's more than one inventor out there in the world, if you had another inventor that invented something similar, you might find out that while yours is new, useful, and non-obvious, and you deserve your patent, you might be, by producing it, you might be infringing on someone else's invention. So the simple explanation of that is, say you had two inventors and one invented the Bowie knife, and it was the first time anybody ever had a metallic knife with a handle that functioned the way a Bowie knife does. So in the attorney would describe it as a knife consisting of a blade and a handle, and said blade coming to a point and one edge of the blade being sharpened. So it has the handle, the blade, the tip, and the edge. So those four components. And someone may come up with an invention saying, boy, those Bowie knives, you know, they're real big, they're hard to carry, you have to buy a sheath, that costs extra money. They may come up with an invention that they call the pocket knife. And the pocket knife has all the components of the Bowie knife, except they add an inventive step. They say, said blade being hingeably attached to the handle. Mm-hmm. And they describe the handle as being recessed such that the blade can fold into the handle. And the advantage of that is you can carry your knife with you. It fits in your pocket. It's safe to carry. You don't need a sheath. And it's clearly an improvement on the Bowie knife. So the inventor of the pocket knife would be infringing the owner of the Bowie knife unless that patent had already expired. So some people go out and they come up with something that's a very good invention, and they find out that they didn't look to see if they would be infringing. They didn't do a due diligence search to find out, you know, to make some effort to make sure that they weren't stepping on some other inventor's toes. Mm-hmm. And quite often, you know, hear in the news all the time, companies are suing other companies all the time for patent infringement. So just because you get a patent doesn't mean that you won't get sued if you exercise your rights with that patent. So that would be a very important search to do. And most companies, before they'll introduce a product, they go through due diligence to see to it that, you know, make some effort. You know, if they can tell a judge, look, we made a sincere effort to see to it that we were not infringing on someone else's intellectual property, then the penalties aren't as bad as they could be for willful infringement.
Okay. So inventors want to know how to do their own patent search. A lot of people, I mean, we've heard that you could do a patent search for a couple hundred dollars all the way to a few thousand dollars. So what's the difference, Bill? What do you do? And then maybe kind of give us the process of what you do, and then we'd step in and talk about how an inventor can do it themselves.
Well, I do my work out of the actual patent office. And at the patent office, they have a secure local area network with a great database with everything broken down all the way back to 1790. And you can search by class and subclass, and you can do forward and back citation searches to see what other searchers have cited from, you know, their work. And you can do keyword searching, and they have a lot of, you know, proximity sensors and stuff. So you can do very, very sophisticated searches to narrow down the number of patents that you actually have to review. At the patent office, just counting the U.S. patents, you know, ignoring all the applications and the foreign art and the literature that's available there, there's over 8 million U.S. patents. And you know, people can only read so much in a day.
Right.
So anyway, what I always do is before I go to the patent office, I make sure that I understand what the disclosure is, and I develop the field of search, and I come up with a search strategy so that when I get down there, I can make use of that library. And so it's a fantastic library, and it's really, I would say, the best place in the world to do searches because the resources are the best.
So I'm going in there as just anybody going in there. I mean, I'm going to be overwhelmed. You know exactly what you're doing. You go in there and you find the class of goods, I guess, or the type of product it is or idea, and you're going right into where you need to go. And what are you looking for? Are you looking at just prior art, claims? That's where a lot of inventors get
lost. It depends on the nature of the search. Say a typical search would be a novelty search. So what I'm looking for is any patent from any class that's suitable to search in that shows an inventor that teaches whatever our inventor is trying to teach. Okay, so I would only be looking for prior art in a novelty search. Some people call them prior art searches.
Okay, so okay. Inventors, when they're going to ask somebody to do a search for them professionally, it's good for them to know what they're asking for. A novelty search is, like you're saying, the prior art. Is it more in-depth? Is it an application that you have to go through, which will take a little bit longer, possibly? I mean, there's all these different variables that might make up how long it takes an attorney or a patent searcher to actually go through and do your search properly, right?
Yeah, it depends on the technology. And, you know, we get more and more patents every week. You know, there's an additional roughly 10,000 new documents added to the database.
Wow.
Each week. So it's impossible to really keep track of everything. That's why the classification system is so important.
Okay.
So, they used to, I was telling you, back in the old days, you would go back and everything was on paper, and they were stuffed into what they called shoes, because shoe boxes were used in the early patent office to store the patent documents in. So you go back into the stacks, and you pull the shoes and put them on a cart, and you take them out to one of the desks and sit down at one of the reading tables and flip through them one at a time. Now, you know, fortunately, we don't have to do that anymore. None of the paper is, well, we don't really have any paper, but you don't have to worry about maybe somebody misfiling a document. You know, if you find out your, you know, a subclass you're looking at has 1,638 documents,
okay,
you can go ahead and look at all 1,638. But to get back to your question, kind of, when I'm doing a search using the patent office, they have, say, professional level resources there. So you have the tools that are necessary to do a good job. If you go to the patent office on the web, uspto.gov, that's not meant to be really a search engine. It's not really a professional tool. It's a good effort by the patent office to make the patent information available to the public freely. So it's really more of a publishing site. Okay. So
I've heard a lot of attorneys use that website to actually do the searches.
Well, there's no reason why you couldn't. It would just be a long and laborious process compared to doing it at the patent office.
Just
yourself.
Getting right
now,
into the books,
right,
and the technology,
yeah,
over there.
Yeah. So if you're an attorney and you're in New York or California and you say, wow, it's going to cost a plane ride and a hotel and so forth, you might find out that it actually makes economic sense to do it long distance.
Okay.
Go ahead, Bill. I was saying the actual resources that are at the patent office that the examiners use and that the patent searchers use in the building, those aren't available on the Internet.
Okay. Just a quick question before the break. It's something that one of the listeners is asking. I'm just going to kind of interpret it quickly. They're saying that do all patent searchers, should they give an opinion with it, or do they give all their information? That's what I was saying, to give all that information to an attorney and get an opinion, right?
When you look for a legal opinion, a patent searcher, per se, cannot give a legal opinion. We really, you might think of us as the cheaters, that, you know, an attorney doesn't have the time or the skills, say, necessarily to do a good search, so they hire a good searcher. But they do have the skills to evaluate the results of a search. So they when I turn my work over, I'm usually turning it over to an attorney. And that attorney looks at it and says, wow, you know, he did my homework for me. But I'm not telling the attorney what his legal opinion should be. I said, you asked me to go out and look for this technology. I went out and did a search, and here's a report I've written you telling you what my findings are. And my findings are only facts. Okay, I say, I found this document which states, you know, what it states in the document. So if an attorney would never call, ask me at the end of the search, he says, so, Bill, what do you think? Is it patentable? That wouldn't happen. That's an attorney's job.
Okay, very good. Sounds good. We have Bill Polkinghorne from Discovery Patch on Got Invention Radio. We will be back, and we'll talk about how an inventor can do their own patent search, and Bill will help us. All right, Got Invention Radio on WSRadio.com. We'll be back in a moment.
Save your cash while increasing your sales. Every business knows cash is king. Quit paying out your cash while maintaining all the services you need. At the same time, increase sales with new customers. Sound too good to be true? It's not. WS Radio has done it using traditional business practices. We will even give you $250 in services just to give it a try. Log on to wsradio.com/barter. That's wsradio.com/barter.
If you're a business owner like me, whether you own a small shop or a large corporation, when it comes to building a new facility, you know it, the process can be overwhelming. And if you're concerned about getting the building you need on a limited budget, you call Anthem Steel for a pre-engineered steel building. Look around and you'll see that more and more businesses, churches, and schools are using steel buildings to save time and money. For as little as $20,000, you can buy a 40 by 60 foot building from Anthem Steel. Anthem Steel has a high quality solution for almost any size building you need. Churches, schools, or gymnasiums. So call us right now for a free quote. 800-603-9978. That's 800-603-9978. Even for manufacturing, warehousing, or retail buildings, you know it. You can call Anthem Steel right now for a free quote. 800-603-9978. That's 800-603-9978.
When did men lose their way? Was it Hollywood portraying us as wimps? Is it the daytime serials where we're on our hands and knees begging for affection from women? Is it all the talk shows telling us women want a sensitive guy or a macho man? Well, guy, how does it feel to spend $200 on a couple of dates and never hear from the girl again? Doc Loves the System can change all that. 35-plus years of Doc Loves life has been devoted to a simple question posed to over 10,000 women. Why do you choose to stay with one guy versus another? Doc Loves the System is a realistic approach to dating written just for men. Visit DocLove.com today. That's DocLove.com today for more about the system. It's time to reclaim your manhood. DocLove.com. The system will change your life.
There's nothing small about the challenges of running a small business. That's why CBeyond offers big solutions to help you grow. In fact, more than 50,000 small businesses nationwide count on CBeyond's award-winning communications and IT services, like our local and long-distance, high-speed broadband, mobile, web hosting, data backup and security, plus more than 30 productivity-enhancing applications. To learn more, log on to CBeyond.net. That's the letter C, Beyond.net. Big solutions for growing your small business. Yes.